Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay. Reading text 26 from chapter 11. Sequentially, the topics covered. Actually, missed a bit while I was away, but those who went to join Krishna are now with Krishna, entering into the city. And those that couldn't go to greet Krishna, the invalid brahmanas and the elderly relatives, because they're elderly and because they're brahmanas, they're offering benedictions to Krishna. Krishna doesn't need somebody's benedictions, they need his benediction. But they're acting according to their position, and Krishna is responding according to each person's position. A nice phrase was used, yatha vidhi. Yatha tata. So that. So then yatha vidhi. It's just appropriate for their position. Krishna greeted them, and according to their position, they greeted Krishna. Same as when Krishna left Hastinapur. Krishna is now entering Dwaraka. And so the elderly relatives, because the whole city of Dwaraka, it's all relatives, they're all related, the Yadu dynasty. Of course, some of the elderly, they went to greet Krishna. Krishna's father was certainly elderly, and Ugrasena was certainly elderly. So they went as representatives of the whole city, but some others remained. And they were offering benedictions to Krishna. The brahmanas were chanting selected shlokas and glorifications of the Lord and so forth. Ladies, we heard a nice description of the ladies. Enhancing their respectability, or elegantly displaying their respectability. They were at a distance, seeing the form of Krishna. The statement was made that it was as if they were drinking Krishna through their eyes the first time, although they had seen Krishna hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. But because Krishna is ever fresh, there's no satiation in seeing Krishna. And so he's also described as the infallible, meaning he's moving about the material world as if he's in contact with it, but he's infallible. He's not, his transcendental position is not at all tainted by contact with the material world. And therefore, his form has that all-attractive nature that no matter how many times he's seen, the beauty is ever-increasing. That's a spiritual form. There's no material form like that. So, this evening's verse is very specific about the form of the Lord. His chest, his face, his arms, and his lotus feet. So the verse reads, the chest is the abode, the Lord's chest is the abode of the goddess of fortune. His moon-like face is the drinking vessel for eyes which hanker after all that is beautiful. His arms are the resting places for the administrative demigods, and his lotus feet are the refuge of pure devotees who never talk or sing of any subject except his lordship. So Prabhupada chooses to speak about these parts of the body of the Lord in terms of persons who have their respective interest, or he says different classes of living beings. So there's the class of living beings that they're seeking after favors from the goddess of fortune. So he doesn't elaborate how materialists are seeking favors for the goddess of fortune and what they go chasing after. But for the devotees, because these are pure devotees, and the goddess of fortune in relation to the personality of Godhead is described in the Vedic literature, is that in that spiritual abode where the Lord resides, that abode that's made of chintamani, gems, chintamani prakara sadmasu kalpa briksha lakshavrate surabhirabhi pavyamtam lakshmi sahasra shata sambrahma sevyamanam. There's countless thousands and thousands of goddesses of fortune in the Lord's abode, not just one goddess of fortune. One goddess of fortune alone is enough, but there's thousands and thousands, countless numbers of Lakshmis. And the abode of the Lord has desire trees that fulfill all desires, and even the buildings are made of touchstone, chintamani gems, and all the cows are survey cows. So it's, if people want opulence, they should just feast their eyes on Krishna or worship Krishna, but not having affinity for Krishna, they worship the goddess of fortune apart from Krishna. So that makes them Ravana-like. It diminishes their potential. And so having adversity to Krishna because they want to enjoy the goddess of fortune without Krishna, so then they get entangled in material attraction and material affairs and material complexity and material problems and material life. It's a simple formula. Reject Krishna and you're in Maya. Even you may be a worshiper of the goddess of fortune, you're in Maya. You don't see that spiritual feature of the goddess of fortune as she is in the spiritual realm with Krishna. So therefore the description is those feasting their eyes upon Krishna, because previously from the time when Krishna was leaving Hastinapur to go to Dwarka, they were glorifying how fortunate are the residents of Dwarka because their eyes are always seeing him. And for by seeing him, it's not like, you know, seeing something nice. It's beyond something nice. So those that see him with pure devotion, his arms, or his chest, rather, is the resting place of the goddess of fortune. The mark of Sri Vatsa is on his chest. Then there's the impersonalists, different classes of being, the lead sentence of the paragraph, different classes of human beings all seeking different enjoyments. So the impersonalists, they cannot observe such goddesses of fortune because of their dry, speculative habit, then there are those that just imagine, the artists, who imagine something beautiful. And they try to then, through their artistic talent, their painting or their music or their writing or something, they try poetry, they try to create something that's very beautiful, overtaken by the beautiful creation. Better they should see the beautiful face of Krishna. For the beautiful face of the Lord provides complete satisfaction. The face of the Lord is the embodiment of all beauty. What they call beautiful nature is but his smile. And what they call the sweet songs of the birds are but specimens of the whispering voice of the Lord. That's a nice one to remember when you hear the singing of birds in the morning. How do they make those amazing sounds and so many different sounds from different birds? But that's just a faint whisper of the voice of the Lord. And then the arms, so the chest, the face, the arms of the Lord. The arms of the Lord are attractive to the administrative demigods because they're the arms of the Virat Rup. So being in charge of departmental service of cosmic management, they have some administrative role, the demigods. They're always afraid of other competitors. But if they take shelter of the arms of the Lord can protect them always from the attacks of the enemy. So they're protecting, but they're protected. A faithful servant of the Lord engaged in the service of administration is the ideal executive head. That's the faithful servant of the Lord is the ideal executive head. Why? He can protect the real interests of the people in general, and they themselves, their real interest is protected by the Lord. Others, taking the post, imitating the pure devotee of the Lord, it's just he uses the word anachronism. It's like an anomaly. It's not the real thing. And it leads to distress of the people in general, the distress of the person in the administrative post. There's no protection for anybody, including the administrator. He's always fearful. And people themselves are always, they're feeling unprotected. They want someone who, so they elect somebody else, and he doesn't do it either. They elect somebody else, he doesn't do it either. And so it goes. Then the last are the lotus feet of the Lord, and the lotus feet of the Lord are the refuge for the pure devotees. And the pure devotees like taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. They have no ambition beyond that. They just like the lotus feet of the Lord. Prabhupada writes that at the end of the purport. They know what the essence of everything is. The essence of everything is the Supreme Lord. And so he is called Saram, and those who sing about him alone are the Sarangas. Saram, he puts in italics. Saram and Sarangas. Saranganam padambujam. Saranganam padambujam. And what is it again that they're hankering for? The lotus feet of the Lord. He uses the metaphor like a bee. The lotus feet of the Lord, the lotus flower of the Lord upon which the Lord's lotus feet stands, emanates a kind of honey. And what do bees like? They like honey. They're madhu. So they go for the honey. They go for the lotus feet of the Lord. The devotees are like bees, and the Lord's lotus feet are like honey. The place, the resting place of the lotus, upon the lotus flower, or the whirl of Goloka Vrindavan. So he quotes full translation of one of the verses of Rupa Goswami. So nice. And Rupa Goswami is comparing his mind to the bee and to the lotus feet of the Lord as like honey. And he's going for it. Oh, my Lord Krishna, I beg to offer my prayers unto you. My mind is like the bee, and it is after some honey. Kindly, therefore, give my bee mind a place at your lotus feet, which are the reservoir of all transcendental honey. I know that even big demigods like Brahma do not see the rays of the nails of your lotus feet. Still, though they are engaged in deep meditation for many years together, O infallible one, my ambition is such nonetheless, for you are very merciful to your surrendered devotees. O Madhava. Madhava is important. It's the husband of the goddess of fortune, referring previous description. I know also that I have no genuine devotion for the service of your lotus feet. But because your lordship is inconceivably powerful, you can do what is impossible to be done. Your lotus feet can deride even the nectar of the heavenly kingdom, and therefore I'm very much attracted by them. O Supreme, Eternal, please therefore let my mind be fixed at your lotus feet, so that eternally I may be able to relish the taste of your transcendental service. Rupa Goswami is such a poet. This is one of the stanzas that Dravida has recited and poeticized a nice translation for it. You know, when it comes to developing a taste. So in the prayer that Rupa Goswami is offering, I'll be honest with you, I have no taste. Obviously he has taste. He could even write something like this without taste. But his mood is that of a humble soul that has no taste. Expressing, I have no taste, but I want, and like, you know, the common expression, like George Harrison writes in the introduction to Krishna book, everyone wants to love and be loved, without exception. Everyone wants such a relationship of love. Everyone wants to taste a happiness that knows no comparison. Who is the exception? No, I don't want that. Everybody wants that. Whether they acknowledge it or express it or jump up and down about it, it's something everybody wants. So Rupa Goswami is just composing this poetry and saying, my mind is like that. It wants this honey. And I know that your lotus feet are that reservoir of all transcendental honey. Please give me a place there at your lotus feet. Now, confession, I don't even have attraction. I don't have a taste. But still I know that you're inconceivably powerful and you're very merciful and you can make anything impossible happen. So I have no qualification, but please make it happen. And what is that? The taste comes from mood of service. So that's what he's asking for. I may be able to eternally relish the taste of your transcendental service. So nice. It's nice to hear it again and again and again and again and again and appreciate the message and the mood of the message. So Prabhupada ends the purport this way. The devotees are satisfied with being placed at his lotus feet of the Lord, and have no ambition to see his all beautiful face or to aspire for the protection of the strong arms of the Lord. They are humble by nature, and the Lord is always leaning towards such humble devotees. End of purport. I mean, you can draw a picture of that one. There's one who's wanting to see his face, and the other one who's wanting to be embraced by his arms, and the other is just in a humble mood, wanting to serve and taste the happiness of humble service unto him, and Krishna is leaning towards that soul. He's drawn by that mood. Now, this is not to negate the or reduce in meaningfulness the desire of the gopis who want to be embraced by the wonderful arms of the Lord and so forth. So that madhurya rasa is there, but the madhurya rasa is not, it's a selfless position. It's not for our happiness, it's for his happiness. It's just the crown on top of the mood of service. Or as our acharyas describe, when the gopis are decorating themselves in anticipation of meeting Krishna, it's not, you know, to charm their boyfriend, kind of the way that somebody might today, a woman might adorn herself with ornaments and cosmetics and so forth, so that she can win her man and out-attract the other men charmers, or men doing the same with women. But the gopis, it's just, the meditation is so that Krishna will be pleased, so that Krishna's pleasure will be increased. It starts with this humble position of the lotus. One can't approach the rest of the Lord's form without approaching properly the Lord's lotus feet. And as that mood increases in intimacy, it becomes friendship, increases in the sense of the object being dependent upon oneself, as in parental affection, and culminating in the intimacy of conjugal affection, but the mood is the mood of service, the mood of service that we don't find in this world. Because in this world, it's, if I'm serving, I want something for myself. So we're Rupanugas, we're followers of the footsteps of Rupa Goswami. He's giving this very, very wonderful description. And I can't help but thinking, oh, this is just the first canto of the Bhagavatam. Such elevated understanding is being presented right away. So that later on, I commented to, during Radhastami, I was at the Washington, D.C. temple, and there was a drama, and the drama was taken from Rupa Goswami's writing, where the gopas with Krishna were having a confrontation with the gopis. And the subject matter was so elevated, I commented to the person that prepared that drama, this is not appropriate for our Sunday feast audience. Rupa Goswami's writings are so elevated. It's meant to be relished on a very elevated platform, because the messages are a very elevated platform. Something like this, it's also very elevated, but the message is very clear. It's the lotus feet of the Lord. Because those sentiments of the gopas and the sentiments of the gopis is of this mood of service, and their exchange is just a mature stage of that mood of service. And if one doesn't understand it that way, how is one going to look at it? It's just contrary talk and doesn't make any sense. It sounds like young boys and young girls having a spat. It's not what it is. Very elevated. So the first, second cantos being the lotus feet of the Lord, Prabhupada is appropriately, although it's still very elevated, the praying to the Lord for a taste of his transcendental service eternally. Fully recognizing the other limbs of the Lord are there. Again, just to review, his chest is there as the abode of the goddess of fortune. His moon-like face is the drinking vessel for the eyes which hanker after all that is beautiful. His arms are the resting places for the administrative demigods. And his lotus feet are the refuge of pure devotees who never talk or sing of any subject except his lordship. Nice verse. Very nice verse. Any discussion? Yeah. The motorcycle's louder than you. Does that mean we should always be what?
How to intensify the desire for mode of service.
How to intensify the desire for the mode of service. Here's a nice, through the example of the acharyas who have that mode of service, and they offer us doorways and they're beckoning. Through the association of such souls that have that mood. And then in the association of like-minded devotees as yourself, discuss those topics. If possible, hear those topics from elevated souls or discuss those topics amongst like-minded souls. And by churning those topics, not in an artificial way or imitative way or pretentious way, but they provide that entrance. And hearing the topics of great personalities. Think of those personalities that are in scriptures, associates of Lord Chaitanya, or Bhagavatam personalities, or our acharyas, and those that inspire you, meditate on what their mood is. Hear about them, speak about them, remember them, glorify them, pray to them. Hear their prayers, hear their writings and teachings. So you'll imbibe that mood also, because that's their persona, that mood. And their kindness will be felt. Although they may not be physically present, their kindness will be felt. And the key thing is also the qualitative way in which one chants the holy name every day. There's the watering process, the nurturing or nourishing process for that mood, that, and as that the mood of chanting is taken up in the Trinadapi Sunichena spirit, that's what awakens more and more and more and more and more daily, till that becomes your mood if you take up chanting by that instruction. The holy name is like a touchstone, and the touchstone fulfills all desires, and if that's the desire, let me enter into this mood. And you approach the holy name with that prayer. That's what happens. In our Japa retreat, there was one exercise that we went through where Bhaktivinoda Thakur is offering three ways to go more deeply into the holy name. And the first one, he writes, is to meditate on the meaning. And meditate on the meaning is, as Prabhupada says, enter into the spirit of this hymn. So what's the meaning of the Hare Krishna mantras, a request for service. So his suggestion is, while chanting the Maha Mantra, so we did this as an exercise while people were chanting together in unison, of the voiceover was, Krishna, please accept me. And if you call out Krishna's name with that mood, I mean, in more detail, this, please engage me in your service, but please accept me. You know, the unstated part is, as your servant, which is what Rupa Goswami is saying here. Please accept me. Now, from the Lord's side, he's calling us, and we're, absent. We're either saying no, or just don't hear, or say yes, but we put just lip service and there's no response from the heart. So if it's a call from the heart, it's overwhelming. You know, the sense of humility and the reciprocation. Which keeps us in that humble position. Or wants us at least to stay in that humble position, because otherwise the contamination of pride is, oh look, now I'm chanting nicely. Krishna's favoring me. So even when entering into that a deeper mood of service, the contaminations of pride and selfishness and egoism so strong, but continue to strive in that way. Servant of the servant of the servant. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.